Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello once again from deep inside Jolly Rogers Studio. This is the Q Filmcast, the show where we bring to you every week our review of a particular film from the vastness of Netflix instant, as we say. This week we're queuing up the 1992 stage-to-screen adaptation of David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross. So if you've seen it, keep listening to see if you agree or disagree, or if not, keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. I'm Michael, along with James Hard Sub Savage. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you this evening, Maestro?
It's a mystery.
Wow. I was ready to stage an intervention at this point.
Really? I'm going to leave it as a mystery.
That's a mystery.
I'll let our regular listeners figure out how I'm doing. Go back to any episode. The answer's there.
Until tonight.
Until tonight. The patron saint of quality outerwear. We call him Matt St. Hoodie. He's sitting across from me. How are you doing, buddy?
Feeling good. Feeling fine.
You feeling
fine? Excellente.
I'm going back to the old standard. That is Max to the Max Johnson.
Are you not feeling excellente, Max?
I'm full of nachos and fajitas. So
Max, full of nachos, Johnson.
Hold
the guacamole, Johnson.
You better hold the guacamole and the sour cream.
Max, don't bring me the sour cream, Johnson.
That's right.
No, he's Max the Max Johnson. Everybody's here. And also the greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast, that is Adam Jolly Rogers.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hi, Adam.
So here we are, the Q Filmcast, guys. And if you're, if you're listening online, worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thank you for tuning in. Ways to keep up with us. All the standards, all the general ways to do that. You get your Facebook, your Twitter, iTunes, 5-star review. We also have our, Q Filmcast dot what, Savage?
Dot net.
Hard Sub Savage says .net. We all in agreement?
Yep, I agree.
QFilmcast.net. All sorts of stuff there. We love feedback, so let us know what you think. Previously stated, here we are. This is Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah.
Right? So we're going to get into this thing. And you ready to do that?
Yeah.
Ready. Wind it up, let it loose?
Yes.
Okay.
I've been ready since 1992.
I think you were conceived in 1992.
No.
Has that beautiful, glorious beard been around since 1992?
Well, yeah, actually.
Oh, probably has been. Yeah. Glengarry Glen Ross, 1992. This film here, something I queued up. This also inspired our top three ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Best ensemble cast.
Our top three.
So at the end of this, we're going to get into that as well. Here it stars Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Ed Harris, Kevin Spacey, Alan Arkin, and Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Jonathan Pryce, too.
Jonathan Pryce.
Oh, that's right.
Jonathan
Pryce.
Yeah.
That's saying something when Jonathan Pryce is like the low man on the totem pole.
Exactly.
That really is saying something.
I mean, really.
Directed by James Foley, written by David Mamet. Anybody know anything about David Mamet?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like a true renaissance man. He does all of it. I mean, he's a playwright first and foremost. He does screenplays. He directs. He produces.
Yeah.
Done some acting. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's all over the thing. Documentaries. Does it all.
Kind of like a Hollywood utility man.
Yeah.
Renaissance man.
He's good at it.
Yeah, he really is good at it. But he does kind of focus on the angry white male experience thing.
Is that why he wrote Ronan, Hannibal, The Untouchables, Hoffa, Wag the Dog? Right. I think Savage is on something.
You write what you know.
Yeah, there you go.
The director, what?
He wrote Phil Spector, too.
Phil Spector raises his ugly head again.
We go back to Deathstalker.
The Spector of Spector.
And there's a little bit of a tie-in here. Did you ever see the... I never seen the film, but I seen the picture of Pacino playing Phil Spector. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I want that wig. Get me that wig. I'll wear it tomorrow. James Foley directed this. Max, you know a lot about movies. You know anything about James Foley?
He's done a few episodes of House of Cards recently.
That's exactly what I wanted you to get into. He's like the headman on House of Cards. He's directed like half the episodes.
Yeah. That's sort of like his big thing now. After this movie, he really didn't do a whole lot except TV work.
I'm glad.
TV work.
He actually directed Hannibal. A little tie-in between the two.
He did. He directed At Close Range. He has like a Madonna fetish. He directed a lot of her videos.
Yeah.
You have your director.
He seems to do well in smaller, more intimate stuff.
You know, he did Who's That Girl?
Okay.
That was Madonna.
Enough about James Foley.
Right.
Here's what you get with the ratings. IMDb gave this a 7.9. Yeah. Not bad. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 94. That's pretty fresh, man.
That's pretty hot.
That's pretty high. Users 89.
That's pretty hot.
Once again, you know, get back to early 90s. A lot of people really like this film, but here's what you have. David Mamet's award-winning play about a group of desperate real estate agents comes to the big screen from director James Foley. Times are tough in a Chicago real estate office. The salesman, Shelley, the machine Levine, Ricky Roma, David Moss, and George Aronow are given a strong incentive by Blake, played by Alec Baldwin, to succeed in a sales contest. The prizes. First prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize is a set of steak knives. And third prize is you're sacked. There's no room for losers in this dramatically masculine world. Only closers will get the coveted Glengarry leads. As the pressure mounts, a robbery is committed, which may have consequences for all involved. Featuring a cast that includes Al Pacino as the office's sales leader, Jack Lemmon as an elderly loser, Alan Arkin and Ed Harris as frustrated salesmen, and Kevin Spacey as the harassed office manager. Glengarry Glen Ross is, at its core, a character study about a group of men whose time has passed or whose character just may be in jeopardy.
Sounds about right.
The sound like the
you owe me
sounds
a
sounds all right. All right, guys. So Max, put the coffee down.
Yes, sir.
Coffee is for trailers.
Coffee is for trailers. Come on.
Come on, man. Do you know I've been wanting to do that all day? Come on.
Say coffee is for trailers?
I don't know.
Or tell somebody to put
coffee
down.
Did you get that, Max? There's a reference there.
I get it. Yeah.
I don't care if you edit this one out. That's really ignorant. I liked it, though.
That was great.
Did you like that, really?
That was awesome.
It was on the fly.
The coffee is for trailers.
Coffee is for trailers.
Which means we're getting ready to hear a trailer.
That's right. Here you go. Glengarry Glen Ross. Here's a piece.
Let me have your attention for a moment. Put that coffee down. Let's talk about something important. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. You want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. Somebody should stand up and strike back. Somebody should do something to them.
Alex, this on this earth?
Yes.
What can you do?
I gotta tell you, I'm ready to do the Dutch.
I know what I'll do. I'll go out and rob everybody blind and go to Argentina.
You think you're a thief?
We're just talking.
We are?
Yeah, we're just speaking about it.
Speaking about it is an idea. We're not actually talking about it.
No.
It's a robbery.
It's a robbery?
No.
And what is it we're so afraid of?
All you need, a little boost.
Tonight is the thing.
So be it.
What happened?
We had a slight burglary.
Criminals come and they take, they steal the phones.
They stole the phones, they stole the...
You robbed the office. Oh, sure, I robbed the office. Oh, sure.
You did that?
Will you get out of here?
How can you talk to me that way?
Are you talking to me?
Well, I talk to the police, I get nervous.
You know who doesn't?
Who?
Thieves.
What's your name?
Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alec Baldwin, Ed Harris, Alan Arkin, from the Pulitzer Prize winner, Glengarry Glen Ross.
This is how we keep score, the beat.
There it is, guys. Glengarry Glen Ross, the 1992 stage-to-screen adaptation of the Pulitzer Prize-winning David Mamet play.
Yeah.
Pulitzer Prize.
Pulitzer Prize-winning David Mamet play.
I'm sure it was a poltergeist play.
Isn't that what you put on a wound, a pulitzer? Oh, no, it's a poultice.
Dude, I'm just reading the notes here. I don't know. Pulitzer Prize. Wait.
No, he's
Pulitzer Prize.
There you go. Thank you.
Dang. So go ahead and put prizes along with names of things I can't say.
There you go. Good job.
I can say big words like, did you know? Did you know? Ever since its release, this film has been used to train real-life salesmen how to sell and how not to sell.
No.
I don't get that.
Let me tell you why I know. It's because awful. I've had to sit through this before and have someone actually think that they are Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. God bless. Hold on. It's an aside here. This is kind of off topic, but how does this teach you how not to sell and how to sell? I just don't understand.
Don't want to be old.
I had a sales career for a while, and it's just really one way just to pump the tires. You know, take the hill, guys, you know, off to battle, that kind of thing. That's all it is. It's just heat. Huh. Did you know the single largest cost of this movie was for the rain effects in the first half?
That
was some good looking rain.
It was almost a character in the film.
It really was. And also the train rolling by.
Yeah.
You want to feel like this doom was upon you, you know, heaviness.
Yeah,
the Chicago L right there. Alec Baldwin based the tone and the delivery of his famous monologue on George C. Scott's Wars Are Won speech from Patton, 1970.
There's a terrible movie.
During the production, the actors referred to this film as Death of a Salesman. Death of a Bleep Bleep Salesman. Co-star Jack Lemmon said the cast was the greatest acting ensemble he had ever been a part of. This is also both director James Foley and Alec Baldwin's favorite film of their own. Currency. We've said this before. I'll say it once more. We don't do 4 stars. We don't do thumbs up, thumbs down.
That's stupid.
Hoodie, it's stupid. Producer, you think that's dumb to do that?
Yes.
Yeah, we're very original here at the Q Filmcast. We let the film tell us what we're going to rate with, and today it's weak leads.
Sounds good. That's like what they were giving
leads.
Them.
You like weak leads?
Weak yeah. leads.
Not
weak
leak. Leads. I didn't say leak weeds.
I didn't
can't
either.
Sell nothing don't with say weak leads.
You can't sell anything with leak weeds either.
Weak well, I don't
leads.
Know. Maybe you could.
Weak weeds. Weak I mean, leads. They were eating Chinese, so maybe they had some leak weeds at the Chinese
the
restaurant.
Leads are weak.
Okay, so you want to get into the ratings of this thing? How do we typically do this? I guess we go around with the guy who queued it up. And then,
hello, you.
I'm somewhere between 7 and 8. 7 because of some filmmaking that kind of drove me a little crazy. But 8, I might just go ahead and put 8 down because of the atomic dialogue and acting.
Atomic.
It's atomic, man. Yeah. And I'm going to go straight over to James Hard Sub Savage. What do you got? How many weak leads?
I have to give it a 9. I would give it a 10, except there's some, I like my movies big, and this is by its nature constrained. So
yeah.
If it were a little bigger, a little over the top, I'd give it a 10, but this is perfect on so many levels.
The patron saint, quality, high quality outerwear. He's about to talk into his mic and still tell us what he's going to sell thinking. Us. He's going to sell us on how many leads he gives this thing.
Having watched this film, I can see the draw for many people why they would say this is a good movie. It didn't really sell me in particular. but nice. I really can't see why, like, especially when you're asking James, what are you going to give? I was like, in my head, 9, definitely yeah. 9, yeah. because it's a very theatrical movie and he's a thespian. I don't know if you know that at home, but yeah. he's a thespian. So I don't think that the theater translates well to the movies. Mm-hmm. I think that we've proven this on the show with mm-hmm. a couple of things. I'm between a 5 and a 6. I'm going to go a 5 for now.
Okay, interesting. Max to the Max Johnson gumbo, hold the guacamole Johnson. What are you going to give this?
Hey, I've got like 87 names.
Hey, wait a second. Right. I like hold the guacamole Johnson.
Hold the guacamole.
What you going to how sell me, man?
In disagreement with Matt, that this actually did transfer well from the stage to the screen because they had a director and a screenwriter that knew what they were doing.
The director did not.
Yeah, he did.
No, that was bad. That was
he had a pretty good idea. He had a better idea than Tom Stoppard, that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's true. For damn sure, because that guy had no clue what he was doing. with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern dead. Anyway, I'm going to give this a solid 7 weekly.
And by the way, we're talking about the 1992 film Glengarry Glen Ross. The greatest producer in our illustrious history, Adam Jolly Rogers. Blow my mind. Sell me, buddy.
I'm really liking the word weak in this, and I'm going 2.
What? Whoa. What a shock.
Wow.
But you mean Krozenstrantz?
Krozenstrantz.
That was at least entertaining.
Wow.
Nope. Nope.
Okay.
We agree to disagree.
31. Wow.
Adam, you sandbagger. What are you doing?
At this, man.
I think I'm giving it a high rating for me.
Okay.
Booming.
All right, you want to get into why?
There were no explosions.
No, there weren't no explosions.
No. And there's no explosions, but ironic I brought up the word atomic.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, but I use that word atomic again as far as the acting, especially the writing. I mean, there are some guys that just know how to put words on a page, and there are some guys who know how to take the words, look at the page, and bring life to them.
Yeah.
That's what this film did for me. I just enjoyed the aspect of seeing great, talented stage actors. Take words.
Stage actors.
Right, no, stage actors.
They're all film actors.
No, they're all film actors. But, you know, if you look at Lemmon, yeah. there's a certain type of guy that is just trained on the stage. And his whole job is it's black and white. How can I bring this meaningless, lifeless sheet of words right. to life?
Right.
This film is full of that. That's what I love. It was hot. I mean, I don't think there's only like 10 minutes of this whole film where there's something not being said. And to have that much dialogue work really worked for me. But yeah. what I liked about the writing here and what I really, really enjoyed about this film was, you know, this is a war movie. This is a war film. You have the general coming in. Take the hill. Forget your morals. You will die if you have to. You will take that hill. You will go into battle with the Alec Baldwin character. And it's that duality. And then you see the after effect of the war with the office in disarray, just like a battlefield. And there's people still desperately trying to stay alive and they're trying to fight for their fellow soldier and just that whole world. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then at the end, you have someone falling on the sword, so to speak, you know? I mean, all that duality and all that of one world played against
this world and how it all came together. It is brilliant, brilliant
yeah.
writing. And I would love to see the play of this. I've never seen it, but this really would translate very well on stage for sure. Mm-hmm. I loved everything about the way the framework of it.
Yeah.
When you just strip it down to this is actors reading notes on a page.
Yeah.
And come on, Jack Lemmon, he recently passed. I've always liked his work, even back to like, what's that old film? Mr. Rogers.
That's me.
Not you. But your arm is right.
Yeah, I think you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that one. I remember as a kid being really drawn to him because there's just so much life into what he says. He could read a phone book and it would just be dripping with life. I like the film for all those reasons, guys. That's it. Love the writing. Love the framework. Love the idea that you're taking and making a war movie out of people who emotionally, they were at war.
It's Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Roberts. As far as some of the pitfalls of the film, some of the worst use of music I've ever seen in the film. It just aggravated me. Someone just kill the music and let these guys do what they have to. There's certain things that pulled me out of the film, but once again, I'm going to use the word atomic. It's there. Savage, what do you have?
You think we should go two positives?
Or no. Let's go to Matt. I'm going to go to Matt St. Hoodie, if he can. You want me to hold up? You want to go to Adam?
No, that's cool.
Whatever. No, let's not go to Adam.
No, we should go to Adam.
No, because you said that the... I don't remember.
Hey, Matt, I don't remember either.
Right. It's a war movie.
All right. No, I think it's a war movie. I just scribbled down the directing of the movie actually is what pulled me, one of the things that pulled me out of the movie. The call sign of a good director is you don't realize that you're being directed. That's the call sign of a good director. Yep. And a lot of the shots you've mentioned in other shows is that you were framing them in other areas saying, I would do it different. And I was doing that. For a majority of the movie, I could tell that this was a stage show, a theater production. Yeah. And the scene that I'm really harking to with that was with Ed Harris and Alan Arkin, where he was smoking a cigarette, looking out the window, and they're having two bits of different dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that would work amazingly on a stage. But in a movie, that just doesn't fly. It just doesn't feel real. Yeah. And I can't connect with the movie. I can't put myself into the movie and forget that I'm watching a movie mm-hmm. and just completely invest in the story. That is one of the reasons for the low score.
Is it too clever for clever sake? Like Rosencrantz is like too clever for real speech.
I think that's okay if you're on a stage. I think too clever for clever sake is a good thing because you're always kind of aware that you're looking at a stage. You're always aware, you know, that this is actually happening in front of you. With a movie, you really just kind of focus on what's happening. You want to be thrust into the picture, and that just didn't happen for me. The director mm-hmm. kept pulling me out of it with the weird shots that he was doing, and then the dialogue just felt like it was a little too good for its own sake. Like you're saying,
the dialogue
was great, but I mean, who is that clever and quick in real life? Nobody.
Good salesmen are.
Nice take on it, though.
I'll go. See, and I gotta take issue with Hoodie on this because I really enjoyed the direction of it. I read somewhere that these guys got together for 4 weeks before this, and they rehearsed this like a play, so that they could do these like master shots, these long take shots, and just focus on the dialogue, because obviously the dialogue in the script is the star. And there was some really, really clever shots where one guy would be talking and the camera would pull away, especially with the Spacey and Lemon, where Spacey would be marching about the office because that was his domain. Mm-hmm. And there was some really, really clever shots, I thought. And I don't know if that's the DP or the director, but I doubt that the director had much to do with the talent. I think the talent was such high caliber that you guys do your thing. We're going to set up the shots. I'm not going to tell you your motivation. You've been working for a month on this. So I didn't have a problem necessarily with the direction. I didn't have a problem with much of this movie. I think it's fairly perfect. And if you're old enough, again, I'm showing my age a little bit. I'm not the oldest one here, I don't think.
I think you are.
All right.
Nope. Nope. Sorry, Max.
But there was this was written in the 80s, and there was this huge boom in the 80s. There was this get all you can, grab all you can mentality. Yep. It was like feast. There was no famine. It was just go get it, take what's yours, this whole thing.
This captured a certain mindset.
It really did. But it was filmed in the 90s. So by the 90s, all of this had kind of crashed a little bit. And so there's this subdued kind of desperation that maybe that isn't achievable. Maybe these things can't be happening.
Yeah.
And I think the subject matter, the material worked pretty well for both the 80s and like get what you can. Alec Baldwin's not in the play, but he probably is now. I'm sure it's been written into the
It has play. Been. I read up on that. That has been a staple of the play since then.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're talking about the 1992 film, Glenn Ross.
But it works, I think, for both generations. Yeah. I think now there's a lot of technical things with cell phones and computers that would never work. This play could never work as a contemporary play. But I think, and Mike, you have the most sales experience, I believe. I think that the story of the pressure of salesmen
I'm telling
is
you, it's
universal
real.
And
it's
timeless.
Savage, it's palatable. I've sat there and been screamed at over a board. You are nothing but this number. Number's never good enough, but that's what you are.
Yeah, that truth of it is transcendent. This is a story that's timeless and is going to be classic.
Yes.
And it's regardless of its, you know, particular niche of generational niche, there's an honesty and a truth. And it's, you know, when you look at it, it is like a play, like you say, Hoodie. It's like two guys talking. Mm-hmm. It's the classic two in a room. And it's brilliant.
It's pretty.
And there's a cadence to it. But Lemon's a powerhouse. Lemon is a tour de force. I mean, it's just.
He carried this movie.
I loved him. And I loved I mean,
the character. Sorry to interrupt you, but I've heard that Alec Baldwin, you know, the short bit. I think Max actually said this last week that Alec Baldwin carried this for a little bit. And then I've heard Al Pacino was the force behind this one. But Lemon was the man that I was watching the whole time.
Yeah.
I loved everything. I mean, I loved that he got on the phone and immediately he just click. And he's the salesman there.
Hello? Hello, this is Sheldon Levine. Please listen closely. I only have a moment or so. I can speak only to a Mrs. Nyborg. Oh, this is Mrs. Nyborg. Please listen closely, Mrs. Nyborg. I'm calling from Consolidated Properties of Arizona. Our computer has chosen you from all of the many thousands who write in requesting information on our properties. Now, by federal law, as you probably know, the prize must be awarded to you even if you are not engaged in our land development plan. The only stipulation, of course, is that you and your husband must sign at the same time for the receipt of your prize. Now, I will be in the area tonight and possibly tomorrow. What do you think might be a convenient time to meet with both you and your husband? Of course I will.
And he's playing like the sweet old man.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm just a sweet old man.
You know, there's a lot going on under Lemon's character, too. That's why he's on the phone
that's
saying,
why I'm
is
saying...
she dead yet? There's a lot to layers there.
Yeah.
To me, this was his movie.
Yeah. But everybody, all the characters there. I mean, what, we're talking about five characters, really four and a half if you know.
Yeah.
Spacey's character is half a character, so you're really talking about four characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty brilliant.
What about you, Pass the Guacamole? What do you got? Max the Max Johnson. He's sitting there looking with his hands
being
on his
plaintive.
Chin.
He doesn't even like it chunky. I don't get it.
I want to hear what he has to say. Max is going to have a good take on this. What do you have, Max?
First, what Matt said about what I said last week about Baldwin. I said that as far as the stuff you remember in this movie, Alec Baldwin, he stole that. Everybody remembers. But watching it a second time, I agree with him. Lemon is I've never not liked watching Jack Lemon in a movie. It's a joy to watch this guy act.
Joy,
and
that's
especially
a good word.
Mm-hmm. When he is cursing. He is a master of foul language. To hear really this
is.
Guy use the F word
and the delivery
and call people this name and that name and every name.
Because he's always Jack Lemon.
Yeah, because he's always, you grew up watching this guy and stuff like Mr. Roberts we talked about.
He's a grumpy old man.
Yeah.
He's very grumpy,
And then you see him get in something like this just to break loose, and he is the most, and in real life, he's reputedly was like one of the most foul-mouthed guys in the world.
I love that about him.
You get the
glad
feeling
I know that.
You would love to
I'm
going to
go to a six just based on that.
it's like that,
a six, it's a 32.
Okay, I'll get you six in there. It's like that that thing they did on Saturday Night Live where it was Kevin Spacey was imitating Jack Lemmon in the Star Wars things, and he was just cursing his head off. It was great. But besides Lemmon, you're saying that the dialogue was too clever for its own good, but these guys actually talk like this. Have you been around a real professional salesman? I mean, somebody that's good, that knows what they're doing. This is how they talk. They've always got some line in their back pocket. They've always got something in reserve.
Those old seasoned guys,
They're waiting to break it out on some guy that says the exact wrong thing or the exact right thing.
They love it, too. They love that kill.
Oh, but they love it. They've got the exact comeback point.
And by the way, we're talking about the 1992 film Glengarry Glen Ross.
The best part of the movie was when Pacino walked into the bar, got a drink, and just started talking.
Oh, yeah.
And then, he's connected with this guy sitting on the other side of the bar. It sparks a conversation with this guy. You know,
where Rome was staying at the bar.
Yeah,
so
you know, he's sitting at a table with the guy, and he unfolds the paper. It's been, you know, how long in the conversation? And then he walks in and he's like, oh, I sold Jim. That whole thing was a sale. That whole thing was a sale. And I thought that was great.
But, and, you know, I think this movie's based on, there's four distinct scenes to me. Everybody talks about the Baldwin scene. But there's one scene that is very strong in this, and that is the scene you're talking about between him and the actor.
Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah. The scenes between Pacino and him, you're watching almost like a wounded animal on safari being hunted by a tiger, just waiting to pounce. powerful stuff, man. Pacino's good in this thing too.
That's Pacino's intro scene. It's you know, you see him introduced at the bar, and then it goes to the office. So, but Pacino's first intro scene is that deep pitch to Jonathan Pryce, where he sidles up next to him, and you know, they're 6 inches apart. You know, not even that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like when it comes back at the other end. You know, we're at the end of the movie. It's like, I don't have the power to negotiate with you,
producer. You lovely, lovely man. Why did you get sour this on this film, man? What's going on?
Okay, I know
you gave it a 1 on Pacino and a 2 on Baldwin. That's that.
Actually, it's wrong.
1 on Ed Harris.
I gave it 1 on Price because he was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah. I nailed it.
No.
Winner.
And he was a Bond villain.
Yep.
No.
Oh, there's your 2.
Actually, I know y'all are going to hate for this.
Go, right, go. I got to hear it. Okay.
Every single actor in here, other than Lemon and Price, acted the same way they act in all their other movies. I didn't see anything special, like everyone saying, oh, this great ensemble cast. I didn't see it. Pacino's yelling at everybody.
Like Pacino.
Being Pacino. Like Pacino. That's a valid point.
But he wasn't.
Alec Baldwin's being a jerk. He really wasn't. Like he's in most of his movies.
That's a valid point.
You know, these characters are acting the same as in every other movie they've seen.
Lemon, it was glorious, though.
Even though Lemons does act a little very talkative. I mean, I've seen a lot of his movies. And then Price, you always see him as this mad villain or this very powerful guy, and he's kind of a weakling in this movie.
He was me.
He was not you. Out of all of us, I think Matt would be the hardest to sell anything to. You'd be
because
tough.
I'm a cheapskate.
Yeah, you aren't
no money.
You aren't selling me either, buddy. You aren't getting to my house. What is that?
And another thing is, I was hoping there would be a confrontation between all these four guys. I would love for these guys to sit in a room, have a cross between the Breakfast Club meets The Thing, meets, like, have more inner turmoil between these four characters.
Oh, there's turmoil out the wazoo.
You know, to latch myself to add to what you were saying, that's really kind of true. Alec Baldwin played Alec Baldwin as we know him. Al Pacino, with his gestures and the way that he enunciates words, that was very Pacino.
At the end.
But
at
it worked. No, it worked for his character.
No, because I remember when he was giving a speech and he was doing the thing, the pop, pop.
There you go. I know what you're saying.
And I was like, "Oh, that's."
But that kind of turned you off because to me, it still
works. I was waiting for him to go hoo-ah at any second.
But that was to go back to Pacino. That was the beginning of the quote unquote Pacino.
Exactly.
Pacino. This was like, oh, I've never seen this guy act like
this. He was actually nominated for the Academy Award for this, but now I don't think he would if he tried it now.
Yeah, and Baldwin saying, oh, he always plays the jerk. Well, no, he doesn't.
Not at that point.
I love Alec Baldwin, by the way.
He doesn't.
Hey,
his big deal now is he's such this affable character on Saturday Night Live.
Because what was after, Beetlejuice or something?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he was the nice guy in movies for years.
Beetlejuice. No, because that's how this movie set it up, is it pits everybody against each other. Yeah. And Ed Harris actually took it to another level.
Yeah, Ed Harris
where he's playing everybody against themselves for his betterment. And the only guys that actually connected were Lemon and Pacino after the robbery.
That was like a mentor thing.
No. After the robbery had already taken place, Pacino sat down. He's like, "You handled yourself. You know that was excellent, and I would like to be partners with you." So,
no, I mean he clearly said, "I'm everything you taught me how to be."
Right, but
this guy was very respected.
It was a mentor thing.
Shelley the Machine Levine, he's the old grizzled guy that everybody wanted to become at one point in their life.
Right, but the irony behind this movie is that Devine, what's his name?
Shelley the Machine Levine.
The Machine committed the robbery. He was going to jail.
Spoiler alert.
And then right before that, he and Pacino did this little act with this guy.
Love that.
Right?
Scene.
And
fraud is what that's called.
Right. And Pacino, being the top seller in the office, after all was said and done, he sat down with the Machine and said, "I like your style. I need a partner. Me and you are going to hook up," which would have made Levine that much more money. It would have put him on the road to going up. But he had already committed the crime, and he was already...
Can I ask you a question? Because to me, that is my favorite scene. When they pin that guy down, just like a wounded animal, and they're going in for the kill, and somehow he weasels away, right? But the way they work that out, oh, my God, here's the one guy. He's here buying this property. Oh, you know, and they play this whole thing up, and he's putting his hands through his hair. That whole thing, to me, had me absolutely riveted. And maybe that's the black comedy end of it, though, but I found it very humorous.
Yeah, and he was saying, oh, call me on Monday. He's like, we'll only have 3 days.
You know. No, I don't know. Tell me. We'll have to change our minds. Of course you have. 3 days. Well, so we can't talk Monday. Monday, you saw my book. Jim. I can't. You saw my book. I can't. Yeah, but we have to before Monday to get our money back. 3 business days, they mean. 3 business days. Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I don't understand.
That's what they are. They're three business. Look, if we wait till Monday, my time limit runs out.
You don't count Saturday.
I'm not.
No, I'm saying you don't include Saturday in 3 days. It's not a business day.
I am not counting it. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so it would have elapsed.
What would have elapsed?
If we wait till Monday, it would have elapsed.
Even when Devine got caught
yeah.
by Spacey's character, he kept being like, say what? Now do what?
Yeah.
Oh, you're crazy. What? Yeah. No, I don't know what you're talking about. What?
But you know what's funny, Matt? I could tell you so many times you make that sale, and all you do is you hope you can make it to 72 hours, man.
To go off the Jonathan yeah. Pryde thing, when Kevin Spacey came out there and just really blew it for the guy.
Yeah.
And yeah. then Jonathan Pryde turns around and is like, oh, I'm sorry. I know I let you. He became the guy yeah. apologizing. He felt like he let him down.
Yep.
That's yeah. how good a job he did selling this guy.
Well, this just shows how property. This just shows how weak this guy was and how these salesmen seek out these weak guys. When Pacino at the very beginning saddled up to the bar, it wasn't by coincidence. I think he saw this as prey. There's the wounded animal. There's the weak one. I'm going in.
It's very obvious.
Don't you think all true salesmen see everybody that way?
Absolutely. No. He didn't just see anybody that way. He saw the big fish that way. He knew that this was Jim's hangout or whatever. So he came into the bar and sparked up a conversation as like, oh, I'm just a random guy talking to you willy nilly.
That wasn't Jim's hangout. That was their hangout.
All right. So Jim was there at the bar where Pacino just happened into.
No. That was their hangout. I mean, it was right across the street from the office. That was their hangout.
Okay. All right. However you want to cut it, Jim was there and exactly. Pacino saw an opportunity.
He saw him because at the bar, the guy's sitting there with tears rolling out of his eyes. There was something wrong with this guy. He was hurt. He was ripe for the picking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you notice you'll be buying me drinks and then buying property off of me?
Did you notice that when he got away too, there was no empathy at all? I was waiting for him to just feel bad that the guy had to go through this. All he cared about was he lost the sale. That guy left the office, he could have cared less what he had to go home to. Yeah. These guys were intense, hardcore
sharks.
Sharks is what they were.
And the ending scene there with the Jonathan Pryde and the Spacey and the lemon where Pacino or Roma and Levine are connecting. Well, yeah. I mean, it was a mentor thing. I mean, they had a relationship. It was clear that they had a relationship.
And by the way, we're talking about the 1992 film Glengarry Glen Ross.
But Roma's attack on Spacey's character, Pacino's attack on Spacey's character when he blew that sail,
right,
is like, you are a child amongst men. And I'm going to go to the omniscient or the omnipotent Mitch and Murray, the devil that's waiting out there that sent Alec Baldwin. I'm going to Mitch and Murray, and I don't care whose nephew you are. You're done.
Whoever told you that you could work with men?
Could I?
I'm going to have your job. I'm going downtown. I'm going to talk to Mitch and Murray. I'm going to Lemkin. I don't care whose nephew you are, who you know, you're going out. I swear to you, you're going.
Let's get this done.
Anyone in this office lives on his wits. I'm going to be with you in a second.
And to kick it up a notch, he was looking at the police and being like, hang on a second. You're going to wait right there. I'm not done.
He had control of the situation.
Right. I mean, he was the control.
And, Shelley Levine weaved his own web on that one. And that one small misstep brought the house of cards down.
And it was his ego. It was his ego that did it.
Yeah. What y'all are talking about with the Roma being in control of the thing, and then Roma eventually goes into Williamson's office and sits there and talks with the police. Well, here comes Levine. Here comes Jack Lemmon. And said, you think you got it all figured out.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you really need to know when you keep your mouth shut, unless you know when to pull the shot.
And you know what's funny about that, Max? What brought him down? He didn't know when to keep his mouth
shut.
His
ego.
He didn't know when to keep his mouth shut.
Hey, and by the way, let's talk about one more scene. I want to get your quick take on this one, Max. Another scene that I think stood out here, and I love this. This is Lemmon at his best. He goes in to tell Pacino about Mr. and Mrs. Nyborg and how he watched him wilt. And he went into the sales routine, and you could see that this is just almost an orgasmic sensation for this guy, watching people wilt.
No.
And I just love that rendition.
I don't know about that.
Pacino about how glorious it was to break these people, and at the end, I stood there and looked at him, and I said, give me that brandy. We're having a toast. I also understood right then that he's desperately holding on to the idea that this is going to stick. Spacey comes out and just, here comes the house of cards again.
That ain't gonna
stick. And you're like, I understand that feeling.
Here is my big downfall with this whole movie.
Yeah.
I was gonna bring this up later, but you brought it up now. Mm-hmm. The entire movie, I mean, from the first scene, all they talk about is these are bad leads. These are weak leads. These are no good. We can't sell this garbage.
Work the leads.
This is
Work
junk.
The leads.
This is bad. You get two a day. These are good leads. We pay good money for them. On and on and on it goes. And they keep hammering it home. And then you get to Roma and he's like, where are the Glengarry leads? You get your three a day. And he's like, this stuff out of your whatever collection he called it, your trivia collection.
Your trivia collection, yeah.
And even Rome was saying, this stuff's junk. Well, then you get through the whole thing. You find out Levine sells these people 8 units.
He doesn't, though.
Hold on. Well, yeah. Hold on. We don't know that.
Yeah, we don't know
that. As far as we know, he sold them 8 units.
Right.
Then we get past the whole scene with Williamson, with Spacey, and he's saying, oh, yeah, and you think you're such a big shot. You sold 8 units to
Nyborg.
Yeah, those people.
Does that spell goblin backwards?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Nilbog.
I thought Nilbog was saying that.
Someone get Deborah Reed on the phone.
And so they go through this whole thing where you're saying, yeah. How did you know this? How did you know that? Oh, and by the way, you're so proud of the sale you made. Right there, I thought, well, hold on.
Yeah, I'm with you.
These guys were right. These are bad leads. Right. These are weak leads. And he just proved to himself that they're bad leads. They're not any good. They're garbage. My point is, they went back on their own story saying that these were good leads. These were good leads. And he finally admitted, you guys are right. We're sending you guys bad leads. These things, you'll sell them. No. They're not going to stick. These people have no money.
Yeah. Spacey actually even said after that, I called them 3 months ago, and they're crazy.
He said they're crazy.
Yeah.
These people have no money. They're mattress stuffers.
He was still
handing out the card
with their name on it.
Good scene, though, wasn't it, between Pacino and
it was really nice. One of my favorite scenes of the movie is when you see Kevin Spacey click into what's happening when Devine or Lemon was talking.
Yeah.
Really nice because you saw, and this is a very Kevin Spacey move to make. It was very much like Adam was saying. This is Kevin Spacey as we know him playing this role. Yeah. That face, you can put Kaiser Soze right there and it'd be the same face.
I'm done with you.
How do you know I made it up?
What?
How do you know I made it up?
What are you talking about?
You said you don't make something up unless it's sure to help. How did you know I made it up?
What are you talking about?
I told the customer his contract had gone to the bank.
Had it?
No, it hadn't.
What are you getting at?
Well, I'm saying this, Shelley. Usually I take the contracts to the bank. Last night I didn't. Last night I stayed home with my kids. How did you know that?
And by the way, we're talking about the 1992 film, Glengarry Glen Ross. Did you buy the tension of the office? Was the reveal surprising to you that it was Levine that actually robbed the office? Did any of that stick for you?
No.
Don't ask Cody about that.
They built it up that it was the Ed Harris, Ellen Arkin thing. They were definitely going to rob it. But then you had the scene where Jack Lemmon goes to the house, gets shot down, and then the very next scene.
Another great scene, by the way.
Yeah, no doubt. But then the next scene is him parking at the office, getting out in the rain and walking into the building. It's like, what else are you going to do at midnight? You know, you're going to rob the place. So
what motivated him? Was it, do you think his heart was in the right place at all in here? What am I trying to say?
I don't know. He got $2,500 out of it.
No, that's not the point, though.
My point is $2,500 is not that much money.
No, it's not.
But after that, he went and made the sale. He says, I'm back on top. I've made $82,000.
Right.
I'm back on top. And then he got to chew out Kevin Spacey, who was chewing him out before. So the whole thing was about ego.
We have to talk about, and I can't believe we haven't done this yet, the Baldwin scene.
Yeah.
Did that work for you? Because that is the scene people remember. It's a standalone scene. It works, man. It has blisters on it. I like the way that came in, and it just leveled the story automatically, and it put everything in its place instantly. And it came in, 6 minutes into the film?
Yeah.
The thing comes in like a jackhammer. Was that almost too bold for you? Did it work for you? Did you find it annoying?
That scene defines Alec Baldwin. Everything he's done since then is because of that.
But if you'd never seen Alec Baldwin before that, as Max brings up, how good is it at that time? You know,
That scene has established itself as an iconic scene in film of all time.
You should go to YouTube and watch the kids that do it. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's been made fun of and parodied a million. He did it himself on Saturday Night Live.
He
was the elf, always be cobbling. And he even screwed up.
That's right.
He even screwed up on Saturday Night Live. He said, always be cobbling.
Yeah. It's a hard racket for these sales guys. I have some sympathy for them because, you know, it's almost like if you're going to go into that world, these guys thrive off of that. I can't stand it. When you get a sales guy who's invested into that world, they're tied into that feeling, that kill, that hunt, that instant gratification of winning over something. And I think people who try to control other people do so because their own lives are so out of control. I mean,
I think there's a salesman gene, though.
There's a salesman gene, I'm telling you. And once it's in you, you don't get rid of it.
Yeah, there are people who are born. I mean, you can train a certain type of technique and whatever. But all this talk, let's give a little shout out to Ed Harris and Alan Arkin here. I mean, these guys were powerhouses in their own right. I mean, we're talking about the big two. Let's talk about the small two. And it's, you know, Ed Harris was brilliant. And yeah, he was Ed Harris. And Alan Arkin was brilliant.
He was all clueless. Ed Harris-y. What was Alan Arkin's character? This guy just, he couldn't sell anything. He was just like the schlop of the office.
He created his own backstory for the character because he hated the character in the play and he didn't want to do it.
That's right. I read that too.
So he made up his own character.
And I really liked his character.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, he was kind of mousy. He was kind of mousy, but I mean, you could tell that he was a good guy, a good salesman, but this just wasn't the world for him.
I didn't see these people as degenerate as I thought they could easily be described as. I thought there were things here that kind of pulled them back into that little sympathetic realm.
And that would have been an easy way out to make these guys just total sleazebags.
That's my point, yeah.
And they didn't. You didn't hate any of the guys.
I didn't like Ed Harris. I was sympathetic towards everybody but Ed Harris.
They were sleazebags. Yeah. No, there's no innocence in this. There's no innocence in this. These guys aren't innocent. I mean, they're all misrepresenting the product.
Can I ask you a quick question?
You sure can.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into our top three in a minute. This is the two.
And I'll try and persuade you with my
1992
answer.
Film, Glengarry Glen Ross. I like the way this conversation is going. Out of all these guys, which one do you think could sell you if they were in your house? You think Pacino could sell
Rick
you
Roma.
Easier than the rest of them?
No, oh, yeah.
Richard Roma, he could sell you. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah.
Any of them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Adam
yeah.
just says yes. It doesn't matter.
To Roma, y'all are saying that.
I got to go with Arkin. I think I would trust him more.
That wiener.
There's an innocence to him.
But you just literally said that nobody's innocent.
I did say that, but he's the most innocent of them all.
All right, guys, that's 1992 Glengarry Glen Ross. Before we get into our top threes, anything else?
That brings me to tears every time.
All right, so we had our ratings before. Everybody holding on that? I'm going to go with my 8. I'm going to stick with my 8. Savage, you still on 9?
I'm doing 9.
God, I want to give it a 9, but I feel cheap about it now.
No, give it a 9, man. You wanted to be brought up.
Let me tell you something. Just because
Shelley, the machine Levine, wants you to have a 9, sir.
Are you seeing me wilt?
Yeah.
I'm going to wilt.
Yeah, wilt.
Oh, wow.
Wilt, Mr. Nyborg. Wilt.
If Adam would not have given it such a low number, I would have stayed with 8. Give me a 9 on that. I'm going to go with 9.
That's the wrong reason.
No, because it's teetering. The more I talk about this, it has smoke coming off of these sheets, man. This is dialogue.
Smoke coming off these sheets. I don't know.
Are we talking about the same movie?
He's got the Glengarry lead, though. He's got the Glengarry lead.
Let me tell you something. I've been married a long time. There's no smoke coming off any sheets.
Oh, come on.
What you going with there, Hoodie? What do you got?
I'm kicking it up to 6.
All right.
And that's based on Pacino and Baldwin and Lemon. You can't discount what they brought to this movie at all.
No. There's a powerhouse performances, all three.
Max Johnson, where are you going with this?
I'm sticking with my 7.
Adam, any love?
Nobody can sell Max.
Nobody.
I'm not even going to go down. I'm just.
It's because you have terrible taste.
I'm not. I'm.
That's not
I'm
why he's not going down.
All right, guys. 33, 1992, Glengarry Glen Ross. All right, 33. Now, this did inspire our top three. What did it inspire?
Ensemble cast.
We'll get there.
I forgot. Oh, and once again, if you want to watch this film, I can't imagine anybody really hating it. Definitely give it a shot. It's on Netflix.
Clearly somebody can hate it.
Somebody can hate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Do we want to define an ensemble cast? Here?
Please do.
Don't do that because then I'll be out to change mine.
You won't have to change
yours. No, let's hear what Max Gumbo.
I'm
going to call you Gumbo.
That's fine.
Gumbo.
Call me what you like.
Awesome.
Right. How would you define an ensemble cast?
Here's
Max.
What I define an ensemble cast as. Doesn't have to be the greatest actors in the world. That doesn't hurt.
Okay.
But you want a cast, you want a crew that has equal time, equal skin in the game. If there's one guy that dominates the whole thing and everybody's a bit player underneath him, not an ensemble cast.
I want to hear yours. Yes.
When we start off, my number
I think
three?
I know yours, but go for it.
You have no idea what I'm going to say.
It's going to be in there. Go ahead.
Go for it.
I'm thinking you may. I may be on. I think I know what you're going with. I'm going to be awfully close. It's going to be in the same vein. Matter of fact, I'll throw it out there right now because it was going to be my number three. My number three best ensemble cast, I'm going to go with the Thin Red Line.
Straight forward.
Matt called this at like 10 o'clock this morning.
I said, if I know Michael, it's going to be a Thin Red Line because that boy loves mallet.
I love Thin Red Line. All internal dialogue being delivered by a massive ensemble. That thing went on forever. But I did like that movie. That's my number three. That's my number three top ensemble.
Who all was in that?
Everybody.
Do you have time? Yeah. Do you have time?
Yeah, let's hear it.
You had the guy that played that one guy in the other movie.
You didn't write him down.
I actually knew one of the guys in that gave the speech at the end.
You have Sean Penn. You have John Travolta. You have John Cusack. You have Jim Caviezel.
Not to mention all the people that he actually cut out of the movie. All the big names that he just cut their part.
There's a ton of people in this film.
Nick Nolte.
And it's still a bad movie.
John C. Reilly. Woody Harrelson. William. Jared Leto,
slow burn, though.
John Travolta, slow George burn. Clooney, Nick Stahl.
I thought
Stahl.
That was a beautiful. Shut up, enough.
I'm going to sleep just listening to the names.
To the Savage we go. Release Your Inner Savage. What's your number three?
I'm going to be pedestrian. I'll go with the Ocean's movies, particularly number 12.
Oh, good on you, too.
12.
It's 12. Absolutely. You have to mention those.
I like
you
12. There was a you real have to, playfulness yes. with Ocean's 12, the second one,
because those characters mesh so well together that you can't discount it.
I would say it's a definitive.
Because they're good friends, it looks like.
That's a definitive ensemble cast, actually.
And there was fairly equal time given. Yeah. I mean, like Max said, I think this falls in the qualifications of what Max said. It wasn't George Clooney's movie. I think it wasn't. Yeah, so Ocean's 12.
I mean, he was clearly the main character in the movie, but if one of those other people would have been dropped out, done.
Hoodie. The patron saint of quality outerwear, top three ensemble casts. What is your number three?
I went about it a little bit differently. I was choosing Troops on this one. And my number three is Super Troopers because I love Super me some Troopers. Broken Lizard.
I have not seen this film. I have not seen Super Troopers.
What?
Should I watch it?
Yep.
It's pretty funny.
You think so?
Have you seen any Broken Lizard stuff?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Beer Fest. Am I breaking your heart because I have
Dread.
No Broken Lizards?
Pass on Club Dread.
No,
I love that movie.
Okay.
Oh, God.
The Pac-Man scene was hilarious.
Oh, no, nothing was hilarious.
You guys are losing me. Adam, read more about the Thin Red Line real quick. No, sorry. All right, there's your number three, Pooper Troopers. Super Poopers. Pooper Hoopers?
What? Super Troopers.
You should watch it. It's a good movie.
Starship Troopers. I got it. Max, to the Max Johnson.
Starship Pooper Troopers.
No, I actually have heard of that film. I need to get around seeing that. Number three for you, Max, is Blow My Mind. Sell me, buddy.
First thing I thought of when you mentioned this, The Player, 1992. Robert Altman movie.
Love that film.
Love that movie.
You think
love
that's an ensemble?
Oh, it's totally an ensemble.
There's a lot of cameos.
Yeah, and here's why I included it despite my description of an ensemble.
It's also from 1992, like this film.
Well, yeah, that's why. Aww. There you go. Done. Boom. It's from 1992. No. Even though this was clearly about Tim Robbins' character, all these other people that were in the movie played pivotal little parts in the movie. If one of those would have been dropped out, you know, in the context of the story, the whole thing would have fallen apart. And they all played integral roles.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a cheat, yes, but it was the first one I thought of.
Hey, would you,
Wow, this was awesome.
Refresh
I love that movie.
Just a little bit. Who else
was in
it?
A ton of people in it. I mean, everybody.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Everybody's
in it. Sidney Pollack.
Greta Saatchi, Fred Ward, Whoopi Goldberg, Peter Gallagher, Brian James, Vincent D'Onofrio, Sidney Pollack, Law Lovett, Karen Black, Gary Busey, Cher, James Coburn, John Cusack, Peter Falk, Jeff Goldblum, Elliot Gould, Nick Nolte, Jack Lemmon.
Really is a good movie.
The greatest producer in the history of the Q Film Cast, and that includes this episode as well. What's your number three?
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner? I thought about that.
Blade Runner's not bad. I mean, there's
Who
a lot
framed
of good
Roger Rabbit?
Okay. It's almost as good as Blade Runner.
Okay,
you put
I like
all
that.
You put all these cartoon characters together. You got everything from Walt Disney,
I like
Warner
what he's
Brothers.
Doing.
First
I like
off,
what he's doing,
Looney Tunes is the best, number one ensemble cast of all time.
It truly is.
They were true.
Plank is a genius.
Yeah,
love the guy.
Love that answer, man.
Yeah, I mean, what other cartoon or whatever the movie has put all these cartoon characters together?
Let me see, where should I go? I'm gonna go with this just because I'm gonna speak for the whole trilogy, and I'm gonna say my number two is Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back. What? Come on, that's an ensemble, is it not?
I think there are crickets.
How is that not an ensemble?
Well, same ensemble from the first movie.
So what? It's a better film. I'm going with Empire Strikes Back.
Lando.
I would say that's a big ensemble cast. How is it not?
It's a good ensemble cast, but...
Yeah.
Oh, screw you guys.
Nobody's really feeling that one.
Was it because you don't like the film or because it's not an ensemble?
Oh, God, no. Who hates Empire Strikes
Back? It is the
Back.
Absolute best one.
That was my point. But how is this not an ensemble? You have different parts going to different chapters of this film laid out perfectly together. I'm calling this an ensemble.
That's basically you basically just named a troop, so you're on my bandwagon.
Yeah. All right, whatever,
I'm on the hoodie bandwagon.
You basically, just named a movie with characters.
No, because they did three of them, so that's a troop.
You want me to name another one? I have a backup plan.
Yeah,
let me
go to my backup plan. You got your backup. Twitter army behind you. I know you've been reaching out to Twitter.
I'm going burn after reading.
Oh, that's a good
one.
You feel better, Max?
I feel better.
Are you okay
about that
now?
Yes, I feel better about that one. That was a good one. Everybody had an equal part in that.
Can I take my poop hat off now?
Yep.
All right. Savage, number two, what is it?
I'm feeling Hoodie's troop thing, and I don't want to cut him off at the knees or anything, but I'm going to go with Monty Python.
I thought about that.
Life of Brian.
Oh,
I would go with Life of Brian.
I would have gone Holy Grail, but whatever.
I've never seen Life of Brian.
Oh, man. Holy Grail's a better movie.
Nope, Life of Brian's
better. Life of Brian.
Nope.
Holy Grail's better. Life of Brian's awesome.
What you got, Hoodie?
I am sticking with my troop, going with the Wes Anderson boys and girls. Life Aquatic.
Got it.
Such a great movie.
One of all my time favorite ones. I love Life.
I need to do that.
That's with Steve Zissou, by the way.
Yeah,
so.
it's kind of Zissou's movie.
Bill Murray was in it. You need anything else? That's all you need. Max the Max Johnson, a gumbo, pass the guacamole, and pass me your number two. What is it?
The Great Escape, 1963.
Boom. Yeah, I thought about that as well. That's one I've seen.
You're my favorite.
How can you pass that? That's come up twice in the last couple
that's
weeks.
That's one of my all-time favorite movies, I think.
The greatest producer, as always. What's your number two?
The Muppet Movie.
You like that answer?
Yeah,
The Muppets.
One. The Muppet movie? I don't know a different direction on this one. He's got Looney Tunes. He's got the Muppets.
Yeah, I'm
Looney
picking
Tunes
up
is
a
number
theme.
One for ensemble. Muppets would probably be a close number two.
I'm thinking My Little Pony is number one.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking Jim.
Jim.
Who's Jim?
That would be outrageous.
truly outrageous. I'm coming along. It's truly outrageous.
Good for you.
You know what I'm learning? Adam's the best salesman at this table. He just sold me on the Muppet movie. Good choice.
It is a good choice.
Adam, that's a quality
that's a
choice.
Good choice.
Yeah. My number one, and I feel really good about this. I think the number one ensemble cast for me is The Big Chill.
That's a good one.
That's not bad.
I like the film. You have Kevin Kline. You have
Glenn Close.
You have Jeff Goldblum.
Kevin Costner.
Well, he played
the
dead guy.
Cut. Jennifer Tilly's sister.
Jennifer Tilly was great.
Oh yeah, Jennifer Tilly's sister. Yeah, Austin was great.
Ooh, it's a great ensemble. And really, that is about the entire cast. That whole movie is based around all these people playing one big part. They're all in it together. I love that film, and that's my number one.
And
Savage.
It had Poltergeist era Joe Beth Williams.
Yeah.
Hey, do you see that
kinda
they're making?
Kind of hot.
You know they're remaking Poltergeist right now. You know what they're hung up on? They don't know who should play Carol Ann. I say make it Honey Boo Boo. I'll watch that the day it comes out.
Yeah. Sam Rockwell's going to be in it.
Only if
like
they
for real,
keep
real,
her.
For real.
Only if they keep her.
But don't you think Honey Boo Boo playing Carol Ann would be just fantastic?
Yeah, only if the
no, it would be terrible.
Oh, if they keep her,
I'm actually on board with that. I might actually watch
it. If it was a 5-minute movie, they kidnapped her and they made no attempt to get her back. It would be the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah, Savage, what's your number one?
Well, I thought about the Tarantino stuff because he's ensemble, but I'm going to go with True Romance, which is a Tony Scott film,
which is also a Tarantino.
It's Tarantino written, but it's a Tony Scott film.
But it's Christian Slater's story.
No, the ensemble of that whole movie.
I almost put that on my list.
Yeah.
I know where Hoodie's going with this. It's real top heavy on one guy. But it is an ensemble. They're all there.
It is. And this is one of my favorite Brad Pitt moments ever.
There are a ton of
no
people
joke.
In this
is one of my favorite Brad Pitt movies.
What was his name in the film?
Stoner number one.
Floyd. Yeah. No, he played Floyd.
He was just the high guy on the couch.
His name was Floyd. Yeah.
Guy on the sofa.
Hoodie, what's your number one?
I'm going to have to go with, again, with my troop. I'm going to go with Christopher Guest, and this is Spinal Tap.
Excellent. I thought about that as well.
it's the favorite movie of
You know, all those films. You could be Waiting for Guffman. Right?
Nope, but this is Spinal Tap is the best one.
Really
I like your answer. And you know what, though? That's why you are the patron saint of not quality footwear, but outerwear. Number one, Max, give it
nice
to me, man.
Right there.
Give it to me. What?
Number
what
one, the ultimate ensemble movie, perfect ensemble. 12 Angry Men, 1957.
Yeah, well, you just made one happy man because I like that answer. Adam, what's your number one?
That was short-lived.
Oh, wait, you want to get into it?
Yeah, nobody knows that movie.
Well, I love that movie. Nobody knows that movie.
I love that movie.
Sidney Lumet directed.
I don't know.
First movie starring, for Christ's sake.
That's why it's Jack like, Lemons. It's
Henry Fonda, Martin Balsam, John Fiedler, Lee J. Cobb, E.G. Marshall, Jack Klugman, Edward Benz, Jack Warden,
They all had to judge a black man.
And Jack Lemons was in the remake, was he not?
I don't know. Lemons, I don't want to see the remake.
Jack Lemmons.
The original is. You've never seen that?
No, I haven't seen
that's
that.
That's a fantastic film.
It's a great movie. Yeah, absolutely. It is so good.
Adam, what's your number one?
Wishmaster.
Don't know what that is. You want to go on?
Wishmaster.
Wishmaster.
Straight to somebody else's.
No. Okay. This has got every single horror movie main villain ever put into
We need to learn about this.
That should have been number three.
Robert Englund, Kane Hodder, Tony Todd, Joseph Pilato, Reggie Bannister.
Adam was doing so good up
there. You were doing so good.
You know, isn't this the cast of Sushi Girl?
And it also,
that's exactly right.
And it also has Chris Lemon, son of Jack Lemon, in it.
I like the tie-in. Okay, guys, let's stop. Hey, you know what I want to... I like that. These are good
You really were doing well.
Guys, you know what we did? As always, I put this out on... Twitter. I want to get through these real quick. Let's give a shout out to our Twitter followers. Okay?
Hey, Twitter followers.
You might like some of these answers, man. Michael Ian at the No Call Show says pretty much any Tarantino film. My personal favorite is Jackie Brown. Thought about that as well.
That but
Kyle Hall at Marvelous Zombie 616 said Ocean's 11. Sebastian Nebel, he always plays along. At Sebastian Nebel, Closer, Margin Call, and Toy Story 3.
You could like that. Yeah,
that's got some great voice actors.
You know, I like whenever I put this out, I always want to see if someone comes back with a film that inspired. We have that here. Rob Humphrey at Radio Rob 123 said Glenn Ross.
Yeah.
Matthew Monagle at Lab Spice said Boogie Nights Mangolia for all your
Magnolia. That's a good one. Mangolia.
It's a different movie. Magnolia for all your PTA related needs. I like this one too, man. Dalton Brown at Cakeless Roses says American Hustle. That's an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Shane, Cover Years Max, at Film Actually says 12 Years a Slave, The Way Way Back, The Spectacular Now. Okay. Kelly O'Neill at Kelly Uane. Thank you for playing along. 3 weeks in a row, I do believe. The Departed Casino.
Departed is good.
Any Scorsese movie, really.
Did anybody do Inception?
There's on one. My list.
I didn't think of this.
How did that not happen?
Matt at the Q Filmcast says Inception. No, but Kelly O'Neill at Kelly Uane says The Departed, Casino, Traffic, Heat, 12 Angry Men. You like that?
12 Angry Men. Thank you. One of the greatest movies ever made. If you're an idiot and haven't seen it.
Dan at Movie Revolt says Godfather and 40-Year-Old Virgin. Seriously, all the people who rule comedy now are in that. Scott Phillips at Flat Earth. Scott says Goodfellas, Heat, Tombstone, Godfather, and Platoon. All right, guys, that's it, man. That is 1992. Glenn Ross.
Glengarry.
Glenn Ross. Yeah, that's right.
You got to get the good leads.
I like the sequel better. Glengarry.
Letter.
Oh my God.
I like the letter.
Right. I completely crapped the bet on that one, didn't I? Glengarry. Cool. Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
You're fired.
Jeez. Oh, really?
Here's your steak knives.
Hit the bricks, pals. Hit the bricks.
Here's your steak knives.
You can't read these notes. You are nothing. Glengarry, Glenn Ross, 1992, directed by James Foley and starring all kinds of great actors. All right, this is next week's big reveal, and we're going to go over to Max, Pass the Guacamole, Hold the Sour Cream Johnson.
I've got like 80 names.
I like Hold the Guacamole.
We should just turn Max backwards and call him Zam.
Whoa.
Oh.
All right, Zam, what you got?
Next week, I think it's 2013 film Computer Chess.
I heard Max complain about this for a better part of 2 weeks.
Here's one of the reasons I picked it is because I saw it when it came out and I completely did not understand it. And I really want to see what Matt thinks about it.
So
I want to hear Matt explain this movie.
I love
to me
some chess.
This is an unselfish pick. You just want to see the conversation. You think this will inspire a conversation.
I am curious because it got such great reviews and such high praise. And I really did. This is one of the movies where I was like, okay, I don't understand. I don't understand this movie. I want some other people to watch it and tell me.
You don't understand The Sicilian either. Yeah. So
you know, Max,
you didn't understand 12 Angry Men.
That's next week. The 2013. You should say.
I think it's 13. Yeah.
The computer chess.
Kind of like the dope. Yeah. Kind of like the Facebook.
Yeah. Well, this was the Glengarry Glenn Ross. It's on Netflix Instant, guys. If you want to watch it, see if you agree or disagree.
We're talking to you,
That's right, you, whoever you are.
No, you watch this movie.
You hear that?
You watch this movie. You watch this movie.
He just sold you. Yeah.
What was that?
We've all been sold.
Anywho.
All right, guys, on to the next one, man. That's next week. And remember, ABQ. A always, BBQ, Qing. Always be Qing.
Wow.
salesman. Yep, yep, salesman boy on the street. Whether it's hot or cold, it's salesman where you work real hard till every part is sold. Salesman, as the years go by, people changing every day. Hey, salesman, till the end of time, you'll be living in the same way. Always wear a smile. You love it first and you live wild. Short.